From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1975 in what might have seemed like any other run-of-the-mill court decision. But this was no ordinary day. The city of Rochester had denied the request by a citizen to turn over municipal records. There was a new Freedom of Information law passed just a year earlier, and the citizen wanted to use that law to gain access to information. And a state Supreme Court justice decided the citizen, not the government, was right. The city of Rochester had to turn it over. Now, the city had argued that before turning over the documents, they had a right to ask why a citizen or reporter wanted the information. And the judge declared that knowing why was irrelevant. Hand it over, he said. Democrat and Chronicle reporter Gary Craig has filed countless FOIL requests, F-O-I-L requests, that is, over the years. He tells that story of the 1975 ruling in an article this week in the paper, and that's because it's Sunshine Week. We're talking this hour about transparency in government. Our panelists will share their experiences, their occasional frustrations, whether the system is working, how to make it better. Let me welcome our guests for the hour. Megan McDermott's here, reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle. Megan, nice to have you back.
Nice to be back. Thank you, Evan.
Justin Murphy is a reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle and no stranger to Freedom of Information law. Justin, nice to see you.
Hey, Evan.
Berkeley Brain's a reporter for News 10 NBC and also someone who's had to dabble in Freedom of Information requests over the years. Nice to see you, Berkeley.
Hey, Evan.
Later this hour, we're going to talk to Bob Freeman, who is the executive director of the State Committee on Open Government, who I always have never seen his office in Albany. I always picture they gave him like this tiny closet in the basement, and he's a one-man machine just helping reporters around the state. And he's actually coming tonight to the Democrat and Chronicle as a guest here. Megan and Justin, I think it's a guest of you guys tonight, right?
He is, absolutely.
All right, so there's an event that's open to the public tonight, 5:30 to 7, and it's at your offices?
Is
that right?
Yes, at 55 Exchange Boulevard.
Okay, so you want to learn more from Bob about the process, et cetera, you can do that tonight at 5:30 at the Democrat and Chronicle. So, Megan, for you, is the process working? Is the law working as intended right now?
Sometimes. You know, it really depends on the agency that you're asking to give you information. You know, some are very forthcoming, others much less so. You know, I had one request maybe a year, 2 years ago, out to the state thruway authority, which controlled the Canal Corp, and it took more than a year and a half to get that fulfilled. And it was a really kind of a simple request of an inventory of all their properties. But they kept, every month or so, they kept sending me another letter saying we need more time. And on the other hand, you know, I've had many other agencies that'll just provide the information. Just last week, I had gotten a response back from the Department of Transportation telling me just to send them a check, and they'd send me information that I requested just the week before. So,
and clarify
really
for our listeners, when they say send a check, this is not a quid pro quo. You know, put the money in the envelope, Megan, you know, $100 for our records officer and we'll give you something. When you say send a check, it's for?
The check in this case I had to send was to buy a USB drive that they could transfer the data onto, and then they would mail it to me.
Which is somewhat common.
So it was perfectly reasonable.
Sure, exactly. But when it comes to the Thruway Authority and the canal story that took over a year, you said every month or so they were kind of asking to clarify, or now you need to ask for this document or this document. Did you get the sense that they had a hard time collecting the information? Were they obfuscating? They didn't want to turn it over? What was your sense on why it took so long?
You know, I really don't have a sense of why it took so long. They didn't really ask me for clarification. What they were just said was it was kind of a large volume of records that I was asking for, and it was taking more time than they expected, perhaps. Although I would say a year is pretty ridiculous.
To euphemize. Berkeley Breen, is the law working as intended, you think?
Well, I think so. I mean, I don't use FOIL all that often. I probably should use it more than I have. In my experience, if you have a relationship, doesn't have to be friendly, but you just have a relationship with some government organization and you ask for material and they trust that you're not sort of out to get them necessarily, they'll give you the information. That's been my experience anyway. But if you're looking for information that they think could embarrass them, that's where we've run into some serious roadblocks, or at least an explanation that you're not going to get this material because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
For instance, we sent out a really huge collection of FOILs on a particular issue to lots of local agencies. And we wanted emails from one particular date to another particular date with a list of names and words that would be in these emails. We either got totally denied on that, or we got a document dump and a bill for thousands of dollars.
A huge document buried intentionally that way, yes?
Right. Yeah. So any email that had the word NBC in it, that was in it. And we refused to pay for it because we thought that was just ridiculous. But ultimately, what we were looking for wasn't in any response that we got, because in their legal opinion, the legal opinion that these entities got, it was, well, that's opinion, and opinion isn't subject to FOIL requests.
Interesting. And by the way, listeners, when you hear FOIL, sometimes we'll use it as a verb to FOIL something, or we'll use it as a FOIL request as an adjective. It just means freedom of information law. And Berkeley, in that case, that's a good example of how games can be played with information. But I think that's why you go back to that 1975 decision, where it's so important that the judge said early on, it doesn't matter why somebody wants it. So as you said, your sense was they were concerned that the information might be embarrassing to them, but they don't have the right to ask you why. They can't ask you.
And I don't know if Megan and Justin find this too, that sometimes when you file a FOIL or a Freedom of Information request, particularly with an entity or someone you have a relationship with, quite often the first email you get back is, what is it that you guys are looking for?
Well, what are the, as in, do you mean the specific information, or what is it that you're doing here?
Well, I think it's, what are you fishing for? Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's, well, tell me what you're looking for, and maybe I can just give it to you without going through this process.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good insight, because, I mean, there's a story that we've been working on, which we're not ready to roll out yet. That's what these things, sometimes they take months. We've been doing this for months now, and soon enough. But in some of the outreach we've done, right off the top, I've indicated to the people we've been reaching out to, please do not read any sort of accusatory connotation in this request. I understand it may be sensitive. Here's in general what we're trying to do, you know, because I wanted to preempt any suspicion that might lead them to want to obfuscate. So I think Berkeley's point's well received. But Justin, that doesn't mean they always want to give you the information right away. You've said that some people have made it an art form to wait to the last second in terms of answering and then providing.
Yeah. This is kind of the double-edged sword with the Freedom of Information Law. It's been great for us because it gives us leverage. Any public entity knows that if they have something that's a public document, they can wait 5 days to respond to your request and acknowledge it. They can wait 20 or 21 days to fulfill it. But eventually they're going to have to hand it over. They know that. We know that. Because that procedure is in place, though, we sometimes will know ahead of time, I'm not getting this before 20 days. Even though I know it's sitting on somebody's desktop, it's written out in law that they don't have to give it to me tomorrow. Whereas if there weren't a Freedom of Information Law, we'd be worse off in many respects. But on the other hand, they wouldn't have that line of thinking. It sometimes can be a lot easier to get things without the law, because then you kind of get into legalism and it just takes longer.
Sure. And do you have a sense that there are some, you do a lot of school reporting, education reporting.
Yeah.
Are there some people, organizations that you know, no matter what the request is, they will wait the very latest? Or is that not the case?
Yeah, there certainly are some. And it is, they don't usually go prying into what I'm doing because they know that they can't. So sometimes a PIO, we call them a public information officer or a records access officer, will ask questions to see if they can kind of be helpful and make sure they know what you're asking for, and that's fine. But when they can kind of sense what's coming down the pike, it takes a lot longer. For instance, there's a, I won't give too many details, but I was working on a story about a school leader who was had engaged in some contracts with his own company kind of on the side. This is a story I haven't done, but I'm kind of working on. So I put in a FOIL request, and he's the record access officer at his school, for contracts having to do with the name of his company. So obviously, he has some general indication of what I'm doing here. So I had to wait the full length of time and then some, and I had to bug him about it. And what I got back, and this is the second part of it that I think is a area of growth that FOIL could go through, I got hundreds of pages of printouts of PDFs. Now, some people have a form letter that they always include for FOILs. That's not what I do. I just kind of write it off the top of my head. But yeah, one thing I always say is I would rather have this stuff electronically.
Absolutely.
Because none of us want paper. This guy decided, for no other reason, I guess, than to jerk me around, that he went and downloaded all these PDFs and printed them out and charged us $100 to get them. And that's an example of, well, it's written in the law, so I can do it, so I'm going to.
Did you pay the $100?
I think we did end up paying it, yeah.
Yeah, if you had been in News 10 NBC's position of all of a sudden it's thousands of documents and they want a much bigger bill, then you're going to fight it, right?
Sure.
Especially if you feel like it was gratuitous. But no, these are just examples of how the kind of the game is played. As we talk about freedom of information law with Megan McDermott and Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle, Berkeley Breen from News 10 NBC. If you want to call the program with any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. 263-9994. A listener named Mark wants to know, do you have to be a credentialed member of the media for them to take FOILs seriously? No, you certainly shouldn't be, right?
I mean, it's a law that's open to any person who wants to get information. And in fact, under the law, you're not even required to say who you are. Not only can they not ask what you want that information for, you really don't even have to tell them who you are. But it's for any citizen. But it's probably in your best interest to say who you are so they can contact you.
And I think Mark is asking a separate interesting question. Do you need to be in the media to take it seriously? And I do think that that is sometimes the case. I know in my experience, sometimes, luckily not very frequently, I'll put in a request with the federal government. And that's impossible because they get, I assume, tens of thousands of requests a year. And if you're just sort of another anonymous person, it becomes very easy for things to slip through the cracks. Even at a local level, I'll often have a request in for several weeks and then need to remind somebody, hey, by the way, I didn't forget about this, because it, you know, as in anything else in life, the easiest course for a governmental entity to take in these cases is just to not do anything and forget about it. So I think that for a records access officer to know that if I don't give him what he's wanting, then he's going to call back and call back and call back and CC my boss and the whole thing. That's helpful, and a private citizen doesn't always have that track record, although, believe me, there are some that do.
Well, there are some, absolutely. We all know some, but as Berkeley said, you know, if you don't have that relationship, you might not always get the call back. To the point on the different, I mean, Justin mentioned on the federal level, there's FOIA versus FOIL, the Freedom of Information Administration, on the federal level versus New York State's Freedom of Information Law. They're different, but it is worth mentioning as well. They're supposed, I mean, in many ways, supposed to be working the same way. We're supposed to have access to information. So I go back, my favorite FOIA or FOIL story, well, this is a FOIA story, was 2006, and a member of Congress at the time, Randy Kuhl. And by the way, Randy was a Republican, but he was on a what we call a CODEL, a congressional delegation trip. They went to Brazil. By rule, CODELs have to be bipartisan, and it was actually organized by Elliot Engel, who was a Democratic congressman from the New York City area at the time. Maybe still there. He's always the guy shaking the president's hand at the State of the Union. Anyway, so this CODEL goes to Brazil, and I'm wondering, why do we need to send a CODEL to Brazil? Why did our member of Congress need to go to Brazil? They fly military air, which is exorbitantly expensive. And I couldn't even get the itinerary. I want to know, what did you do there? Because it was supposed to be about learning about alternative forms of energy. Brazil does a lot of sugar, ethanol, and things like that. And everybody knows New York State's got a huge booming sugar industry to turn into a sugar ethanol industry or not. So anyway, I thought this would be interesting to find out what they do there. And I could not get really any information from Randy Kuhl's press office, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, they were telling me, well, CODEL, and now this is 2006, I hope it's changed, but they said for CODELs, yes, there's itineraries, there's documents, it's all in the CODEL federal office. All you got to do is pop in there and make copies. And I said, well, I'm in Rochester, New York. And they said, well, you're going to have to be here in the CODEL office. And I was told they had to do it in person. And I had a friend of mine who lived in Washington, D.C., go into the office for me to get these copies. And it turned out it was, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. This delegation took a trip up the to the Iguazu Falls. I still remember it. This, you know, that was basically a sightseeing boat tour. And I thought, this is really, really remarkable. They're staying at these posh places, taking riverboat tours in the Amazon, all ostensibly to learn about sugar ethanol. And so we ended up doing more of a process story than an—I mean, the information was interesting, but our listeners really enjoyed all the hoops they made us go through. So we did a process story and an information story. And then finally, to Berkeley's point about having a relationship, the press officer gets back to us, and they put out a press release the next day attacking our station for going after him in a partisan fashion, which I thought was ridiculous. And I said, well, I thought we had a relationship here. Why wouldn't you just help us out with information? And the answer I was given privately was, well, you know, we didn't trust what you were going to do with it. Well, it's not supposed to be about what we're going to do with it. And it ended up being two stories, a process story and an information story. Are there any stories that come to mind immediately for you? I'll go around the table. Justin, when it comes to freedom of information, that sort of stand out to you as a reporter for either the hoops you had to go through or what came out of it?
Yeah. Before I came to Rochester, I worked at a paper called The Citizen, which is in Auburn, Cayuga County. And there was just
Citizen Murphy on Twitter.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. This was just a gem of an example of small town corruption. There was this town had bought a truck for whatever purposes, a pickup truck. When they had had it for a few years, they sold it to the water authority, which happened to be controlled by the same guy as the town supervisor. It ended up breaking down, and they took it to the shop, which was owned by the town supervisor. And then when they were done with it, they sold it to the town supervisor for below Kelley Blue Book. And this was all voted on, and nobody could see why that would be problematic in any way. So I went to the town hall to get meeting minutes. I wasn't asking for... Separately, I had asked for documents through FOIL, but all I wanted was meeting minutes from like a couple months ago to see what a vote was. And the clerk said, you have to put in a freedom of information request. Now, I said kind of theoretically, I know something is on somebody's computer desktop. I'm actually standing in the clerk's office looking at the binder that says meeting minutes on it. And she said, well, you're going to have to put in a freedom of information request. Now, and this is the takeaway of this is the thing that I try and drive home to people all the time. A freedom of information request is not a fancy, complicated document. You don't need an official form. So what I did was, you know, they have pamphlets for vaccinate your dog and whatever. So I just took one of those. I had my pen with me. I wrote on it, freedom of information request. I'd like to see the minutes for whatever. And I handed it to her, and that's an official freedom of information
request. As long as you're asking for a specific document.
That's right.
That's right.
Now, she made me go home and wait for a couple weeks to get them, which is another thing. But that was the most blatant obfuscating that I ever came across.
And I like the lesson that even on the back of a dog vaccination form, you can turn anything into a freedom of information law request form. Yep. As long as you're specific about what you want there.
But when you think about it, you know, if somebody's saying, well, geez, I don't know how to do this whole thing. I just want to see, I want to know what they spent on X. All you have to do is write them an email that says, I would like documents showing what you spent on X. And then in the subject line, write freedom of information request. And you're done. You did it just the same way that I do it and Megan does it and Berkeley does it.
Yep. So Megan, for you, what stories stand out in your own either horror stories or otherwise?
I have one right at the moment. The Democrat and Chronicle, probably later today, is filing a Freedom of Information Law lawsuit against the town of Irondequoit because they wouldn't provide information that they collected over the past year in their vacant home registry. Now, I had asked for that sort of to see, you know, how the law was working, and they told me that they didn't want to provide it. They denied my request, saying that it would endanger the life or safety of a person, which I really didn't find to be a particularly good reason, and neither did Bob Freeman with the Committee on Open Government.
Who's going to be joining us in just a moment here, yeah.
He will indeed. So, you know, we decided to go forward and sue. You know, I guess that goes back to that earlier question of do you have to be a credentialed member of the press in order to be taken seriously? You know, the press, unfortunately, sometimes is the one that has the bigger soapbox. You know, I have the ability with the backing of Gannett to file a lawsuit, whereas your regular Joe maybe wouldn't be able to pry information loose through that, and they'd be put off by continual denials. Another instance that I had, which I just think was kind of funny, was a few years ago I was trying to wrap my head kind of around how much government officials were being paid. So I put out a Freedom of Information request to all of our towns and villages for actual payroll records. And the thing that I learned there is how different everybody keeps those records. I mean, in some cases, I got boxes of the copy of somebody's paycheck stubs. In other cases, I actually got spreadsheets. In other cases, I had to go through a bit of a runaround, even contacting their payroll company to find out whether or not they could export me a spreadsheet that would provide this information. So that one, too, ended up being both a process story and then a story about what I found.
You know, and that's why I told the story of the congressional delegation in 2006. And again, that was a federal information request. But I think sometimes process stories are valuable to people because they see what it takes to get information. Sometimes they don't like the process. And I think in many ways we need to be more transparent. And it's also important to ask whether the average citizen can get access to information. It's not supposed to just be Megan McDermott and Berkeley Breen and Justin Murphy. And so that's why I think, you know, we think process story sometimes is a little esoteric, but I think it's valuable, don't you?
I agree. Because it should be that any citizen who, or any, you know, person who walks into a village office or town hall or any other government agency should be able to get the records that show what that agency is doing.
Yeah. And Berkeley, you told the story of the massive document dump earlier this hour. Anything else stand out to you in Freedom of Information?
Well, I try to use them very sparingly. I'll be honest with you. When I'm looking for information, it's kind of the last thing I think about. You know, I try to find the information that's public anyway through, you know, either the state education department or the governor's office, whatever. It's usually my last resort. So I don't, and quite often, I usually find what I'm looking for because either it's posted online somewhere or somebody gives it to me. Our major experience with FOIL recently was foiling all these different jurisdictions and in some cases just getting flat out denied, and in other cases, you know, saying, yes, you know, we've compiled all the information you want and you can come by and get it and, you know, bring a check for $3,000, which we thought was ridiculous and we didn't do it. And then we said, well, we want to see what you've given us first and then we'll decide what we want and we'll pay you for that. Nope, can't do it. You got to pay for it, look at it, and then you can decide which ones you want. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, for the people listening today, you know, I suppose sometimes you can use this law, this ability for effect. You know, if some agency or government entity is really not doing what they should do in terms of being transparent, you can sort of send a message to them with a FOIL. That's one thing you can do. But I don't think we do that very often. The other thing you can do is you can go on a little bit of a fishing expedition to say, we just want this, we'll get the information, and then we'll see what happens. Yeah. And then other times you can do it very very specifically. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is get information that helps tell a story that can empower our readers and listeners and viewers to be able to make more informed decisions when they have to make decisions and to decide whether or not they, you know, the town or the school district or the county that they live in is doing a right job and if they get a return on their investment.
All right, let's get a short break. We'll come back and bring Bob Freeman into the conversation. He's going to weigh in on how the law is working or occasionally not. In just a moment, he's the executive director on the State Committee on Open Government. He's coming to the Democrat and Chronicle tonight. So Bob's going to talk to us in a minute, and then he's going to get on the road and come to Rochester. And if you want to meet him and learn more about the Freedom of Information law, 5:30 to 7 tonight at the Democrat and Chronicle offices on Exchange. You're still on Exchange, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Okay, it's not my office, but it's on Exchange. 5:30 to 7. So short break, and we'll bring in Bob next. Coming up in our second hour, Michelle Norris joins us, longtime NPR correspondent, journalist, all things considered host, and the creator of the Race Card Project. She's in Rochester today for an event at Nazareth College, bringing the Race Card Project there. But first, she's my guest for the hour on Connections, and we will have a lot to talk about. Michelle Norris next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Ralph Honda, serving Rochester since 1933, offering new and pre-owned vehicles, including the 2016 Accord Family Sedan. Ralph Honda, Honda done right. RalphHonda.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking freedom of information, and a number of listener questions have come in. We want to bring in someone who is probably better suited than anybody to answer that. That's Bob Freeman, the executive director on the State Committee on Open Government. Bob, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Thank you so much. I've been listening. I've been listening to the comments, and you know, we could talk. We could talk for hours about those issues.
Well, you do. That's what you do.
You ask the questions.
Well, Bob, I'm just going to start at random here with just a listener question. Then I'm going to kind of work through some of the questions we've been working together with our panel, who is in studio with us today. And our panel consists of Megan McDermott and Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle, Berkeley Breen from News 10 NBC. A listener named Joel wants to know, is it true that in New York State we cannot learn about a police officer's disciplinary record? Bob?
Sadly, that is true. Sadly, it is true. Just to put this in perspective, under the Freedom of Information Law, first of all, in general, public employees have less privacy than anybody else because we're supposed to be more accountable than anybody else. The public is stuck with us, at least for a time. And in general, records that relate to the performance of a public employee's duties are public. If I do something wrong on the job and there is a record indicating that I've engaged in misconduct, that's public. But that is not true with respect to police officers. Why? Because there is an awful provision of law on the books, it's Section 50A of the State Civil Rights Law, which says that personnel records pertaining to police officers that are used to evaluate performance toward continued employment or promotion are confidential. And that really means that those public employees who have the most power over people's lives are the least accountable. And in fact, we, the Committee on Open Government, have recommended that that provision be either amended in some way or repealed. We're dealing with the state legislature to attempt to do that. How successful we may be remains to be seen.
And Andrea wants to know, how do we know if information is supposed to be public, Bob?
How do you know? Well, sometimes we don't, and you're really referring to the beauty and the difficulty of the Freedom of Information Law. The reality is that the law says, in a nutshell, that all records are available with certain exceptions, and the exceptions, by and large, at least in my view, are based upon common sense. They're based upon the possibility of harm should the government choose to disclose. The difficulty is that the content of every record is different, number one, and number two, things change. There are often situations in which a record might be withheld today, but it becomes available tomorrow because of the passage of time, because of the occurrence of events. But basically, we look at the law and we assume, since it's based upon a presumption of access, that we have the right to gain access to records maintained by the government.
Rick wants to know if Democrats or Republicans do a better job at being accessible, Bob.
What a good question. Democrats or Republicans? Historically, you know, if you look at the federal act, you look at the state law, and the sponsors of open government legislation generally have been at the extreme edges of those parties. Conservatives on the Republican side, liberals on the Democrat side. It's the ones in the middle who want to preserve the status quo who probably have been, I don't want to say least supportive, but not quite as interested as those at the edges.
Yeah, and so this is, I wonder what our panelists in studio think on this one. We're going to get accused of false equivalence here, but I will say I've never noticed any obstreperance, anybody being sort of any recalcitrance on freedom of information being partisan. I find it more, the more entrenched power there is, the more likely you are to protect it.
You know, I've suggested that at the local government level, often, at least as I see it, there's really no difference in philosophy between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, it's not a political party issue to fill the potholes in the spring. It's a question of who's in and who's out.
Sure. And when it comes to who's accessible, well, the people who are really entrenched in power, generally not that accessible because they don't have to be. Governor Cuomo's never been on this show. He goes on one talk show in the state about once a year, I think. He's not very accessible to the media. He never has been. Meanwhile, people like Mark Johns in the New York State Assembly, we could probably just pick both parties and just go down a list. There's a number of people who will call you back anytime you want. Sometimes they'll call you before you even call them. And so it really hasn't been partisan. So, Rick, I hope that's not false equivalence. Do you guys in the studio, anybody want to weigh in, Justin?
Well, and I think the other part of it is that it isn't generally politicians making the decisions about record access. That's going to be a functionary. So not only, I mean, there could be some political motivation to whether or not to get rid of, to release information, but they also just might be an employee who doesn't want to piss off their boss like any of the rest of us.
Okay. Megan Berkley, agree?
To some extent, you know, in the local governments, I know that most of our town clerks who are predominantly who I deal with, you know, generally take freedom of information very seriously, and they're very good about, you know, providing information. So at the smaller levels of government, it's sometimes easier because you can also just show up there, right? When I show up and I bring a book and I'll sit down and say, can I talk to you about this? And they'll say, oh, well, I'm busy. You'll have to wait. And I sit down and open the book and say, okay, I'll wait. You know, that tends to spur them along a little bit. But I haven't found it to be particularly partisan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Berkley?
I couldn't tell you, in this massive foil that we did recently, yeah. I don't know whether they were right or left or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah,
is the fact. We did touch on an interesting topic here about police officers and their performance reviews.
And disciplinary records, yes.
That is the basis of police departments denying access to body camera video. And I think that, you know, this is going to be an issue that's going to come up very quickly in our community because we already have some police departments with body cameras, Gates, for instance. RPD is going to get them in July. And I think that a lot of people in our community believe, okay, great, they've got body cameras on them. We're finally going to see what the cops do. And my message is, no, we're not. Because the police departments, I think, are going to deny access to body camera video based on this part of the New York State Civil Service Law 50-A, which a couple of state senators, Democrat and Republican, are trying to get rid of, by the way, or they're trying to create a little space where that makes body camera videos subject to FOILs. But I think we're going to see body camera video if it's presented in court at a trial, or if it shows a police officer doing the right thing and the police department wants everybody to see it.
Otherwise, we're not going to see it.
Otherwise, you will not see it. Look at D.C., for instance. D.C.'s had body cameras on their police officers for, I don't know, several years. They've had hundreds, maybe thousands of FOIL requests for that body camera video. The D.C. police department has not released a frame of video, not even a snapshot or a screenshot of video. So I think that will be a big FOIL battle in our community pretty much starting right now.
Bob Freeman, what do you think?
You know, if there was ever a reason for amending Section 50A of the Civil Rights Law, the body cam video is the one. You know, absent some sort of disclosure, some sort of transparency, the body cam video, for all intents and purposes, is useless. It's useless, and I think that the intent of the video is to let the public know, on the part of the police department, that all the officers are doing the right thing. On the part of others, to demonstrate maybe that in some instances they're not performing their duties as well as they should. Again, you know, in dealing with 58, and we have a whole section on it in our annual report, body cam video takes up a huge amount of space because it is an immense issue. It doesn't seem to me that police departments in general, maybe D.C. is different, can get away with saying, nope, can't have any of it because of this provision of law. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, what good is it, though, if nobody sees it?
Absolutely,
I mean, it's
my
not
point.
It's
absolutely
not going to solve the crime.
Point.
The police
That's
aren't there when
the
crime's happening.
The state legislature will wake up and say, maybe it's time to rethink this provision of law.
So that's one way that our panel would like to see. Well, at least some of our panel wants to see maybe some change. We'll see if that happens. Baba, I want to ask a couple quick more questions for you. And I know you got to get on the road to Rochester, but I'll ask you and then the other panelists in studio. In your work with freedom of information law, how can it be updated, amended, changed for the better, Bob?
There are so many ways. There are always little technical areas where the law can be improved to the great benefit of the public. One of the things that, we have proposed, and we'll see if it happens, involves something that, Mr. Berkeley mentioned before. I don't know whether it's Mr. or that's your first name, but either
Berkeley
way,
Breen, News 10 NBC.
We pushed for the notion of proactive disclosure, where the government posts records online on their websites even before anybody requests them. And everybody wins in that kind of situation. If a record is clearly significant, if it's frequently requested, if it's one of those things that so many people want to know about, why not post it online? And when a government agency does that, number one, members of the public don't have to submit FOIA requests. Number two, the government doesn't have to deal with them.
That's right.
Everybody wins. Everybody wins. We would also like to see it easier for a court to award attorney's fees. If you, like the DNC, has to go to court to attempt to obtain records, and if the court finds, wait a minute, government agency, you had no reasonable basis for withholding, or if the agency unnecessarily dragged its feet in responding to a request, it should be easy for a court to award attorney's fees payable by the government. And the notion is not to penalize. The notion, very simply, is to encourage compliance with law.
Well, Bob, then the last question, then I'll let you go here. Let me read from you from an email that we got last week. And I'm not going to mention the source because it's part of an ongoing story we're working on here, but this is just a snippet of an email that I thought was quite telling, because so much of freedom of information law kind of depends on the records access officer, what they know about the law, what they don't know about the law. And sometimes it's hard enough, and we'll talk about this in a moment, to figure out who the records access officer even is. But Bob, here's this was an email that we sent to a school district for information. And it should have been information that shouldn't have been that hard to find. And here is what the school district's records access officer sent back to us. This is part of the email. Quote, regardless of how readily regardless of how readily available a set of information is, a FOIL request is necessary if you are asking the district to provide you with any information. End quote. What do you make of that, Bob?
I refer often to what I've come to call the Spike Lee principle of law. We do the right thing. We do the right thing. And the purpose of FOIL is to make life easy, not difficult. I will tell you that the law does say that an agency, a school district, may require that a request be made in writing. Many agencies dispense with that when the record is clearly public and it's easy to find. And in fact, the law says in its statement of intent that government agencies are supposed to make records available, quote, wherever and whenever feasible. I think that sums it up, really. We make life easy whenever we can.
Yeah, my response was, no, you don't have to make us file a FOIL. We will do that if that's what you want, but you're wasting our time and your own. And for that to be the baseline before you give any information at all, that's just going to make everybody's – that's the opposite of what you were suggesting, Bob. You know, FOIL for everything. You know, good luck getting any information out in a timely fashion. I just thought that was strange, but indicative of how inconsistent it can be. So,
of course, by telling the world about this now, I'd like to refer to the statement offered by Judge Louis Brandeis over 100 years ago. Sunlight is the best disinfectant, and that's why we have Sunshine Week. And today, what you're doing is telling the world about what should be. And often when we tell the world, either good things begin to happen or bad things stop happening.
All right, Bob, we'll see you in Rochester tonight at the Democrat and Chronicle. What are you going to talk about?
That depends upon the nature of the questions, and I will stay until there are no more.
Bob Freeman I try not to praise you too much because, again, I know, you know, I don't want your ego to get out of control, Bob, but you do such great work on behalf of the taxpayers and for the media. So thank you for the work that you do in all
I appreciate that, and I can't believe the government pays me to do what I do. And on that note, I hope to see you all tonight.
All right, Bob Freeman, thanks, sir. We'll see you soon. He's coming to Rochester as a guest of the Democrat and Chronicle tonight. Let me grab a phone call. John and Webster has been waiting to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. This is a great program.
Thanks.
Great program. Great subject. I think I mentioned this once before in one of your programs about an incident that happened to me in the West of the United States. After I retired, I was living in a small town of about 20,000 people, and I got some comments about some skullduggery going on in the city council, so I made the first FOIL request that was ever made to the town of 20,000, and they redacted the information I wanted, and finally I went to the prosecuting attorney, and he said he would handle it for me, and then I got the correct information, which led to prosecution of a particular city councilman. He worked me over in a restaurant and put me in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And I had to have a ninth back surgery because of what he did to me.
Oh, boy.
He was prosecuted. They brought a different judge in from the northern part of the state, and the local prosecuting attorney in the county where it happened had someone else come in to prosecute because of his position, but he was prosecuted, and he did serve his sentence, all over a FOIL request.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your personal experience with it, John, but assuming your account is accurate, it's an indication that some people don't want to part with information, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it actually made, I think, national news, certainly regional news in the Mountain West over it.
Well, John, I hope you're in much better spirits and health now.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Well, thanks for the phone call and the story there. And yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be people like John. It's supposed to be anybody. If you want information, that's the Freedom of Information Law is supposed to serve the public, not just journalists. Let me read an email from a listener named Andrew, because I don't know how to answer it, and maybe our fellow reporters on the panel can help with this. He writes, "Hello, Evan. As an insurance agent, for decades I've visited the Rochester Police Department accident records area to obtain copies of motor vehicle accidents reports on behalf of my client. Most of my clients cannot take time off to visit the RPD. I would show my ID and pay the cost of the report, recently only 25 cents per page. The cost was higher years ago, but I guess the courts, via freedom of information laws, forced the RPD to reduce the cost." I don't know if that's true, but okay, let me continue here. He says, "The other day I went down to pick up a report and was informed that the RPD no longer releases copies of motor vehicle accident reports to people who are not, quote, directly involved in an accident. This means that insurance agents cannot pick up the reports. The client, the person directly involved, has to go down to the RPD to pick up the report themselves. I was informed that I would have to apply to an outside agency, LexisNexis, to obtain copies of the reports at a cost of $13, and further, I must submit a 9-page application to the outside agency in order to be considered to be worthy of that service. Is the RPD allowed to sell this information to outside agencies, which in turn charge exorbitant $13 versus 25 cents pricing? What does your panel think?" I don't know on this one.
That's a great question. I really hadn't heard anything about that, and that seems unusual.
You know, Bob mentioned that the law is based on the presumption of access with some exemptions, and the more of this you do, the more you find how many of those little exemptions there are in places that you wouldn't expect. For instance, I was surprised many years ago to learn that while the law says 25 cents per copy for a piece of paper, county clerks, for I'm not sure what reason, charge 65 cents. And that's just how it is. This things that have to do with police reports and other things, I don't do as much of that because I'm the education reporter, but there are little goodies everywhere when you do a lot of this work.
Goodies is another euphemism that Justin is using. So, Andrew, I would just also reiterate that tonight, since we can't really answer that question directly for you, it's a good chance to go down and meet Bob Freeman at the Democrat and Chronicle tonight, 5:30 to 7, and he will be answering questions from the public as well on that. So if you want to do that, you can do that tonight. Gary in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having this program.
Sure.
And taking my call. I just wanted to talk a little bit about wording of FOILs and the discretion on the part of administrators. And I don't know if Bob Freeman got a chance to talk about this. And in regards, I don't know if you asked, I've been to see Bob in Albany. His office isn't in the basement, but it is a very small office.
I figured it was very small, yes.
One of the interesting things about Bob is that, and I hope to go to his talk tonight, is that he is the longest serving employee in New York State. He's worked for New York State for over 40 years. But the topic, what I wanted to talk about was that recently, an organization filed a FOIL from the Monroe County, the Monroe County Medical Examiner, and we simply wanted to know how many people died from gun violence in Monroe County every year over a period of a couple of years, and we were denied. And within 2 months, the medical examiner, Monroe County, publishes a detailed report with very similar information, in fact, actually more detailed information about heroin deaths. And so sometimes there's this human factor involved, and maybe the panel can talk sometimes about the discretion that administrators use sometimes when they deny or accept FOIL requests.
We were talking earlier about kind of the hoops that you can be made to jump through when the agency doesn't want to release it. And one of them absolutely can be the way that you word it. I had an experience with a school district a while ago. They had gotten rid of two high-ranking administration officials, and I put in a FOIL request that was broadly worded saying any documents relating to the departure of these people, including but not limited to separation agreements, da-da-da. And after my 3 weeks exactly, I got back what I wanted. I did a story about it. And I learned that some, I don't remember which of the television stations, had been denied on essentially the same FOIL. They were looking for the same information. But I think, if I recall correctly, they had asked for information related to the dismissal or the firing or something of these administrators. And in fact, they hadn't been dismissed. They had resigned. That was the word that they had chosen to use. So to the extent that they don't want to hand over the information, it's pretty important to get your wording right and do it as broadly as you can. Now, you had an earlier, and this kind of relates, you had an earlier caller asking, how do you know if it's public or not? A lot of the time, the way you know it's public is you go to Bob Freeman's website and look at his advisory opinions, because they have written opinions on almost every conceivable topic under Freedom of Information Law. There's kind of a game of brinksmanship because there's a set number of steps. They can deny your request, and then there's an appeals process, and then you have to go to a lawsuit. And nobody wants to do the lawsuit because it's expensive and it's a pain. And, you know, we're both sort of weighing that factor. So if you can, in your original request and especially in your appeal, cite the Gospel of Bob Freeman, chapter and verse, in terms of what's public and what's not, and show where other municipalities have had to pay $100,000 because they didn't give up something that they had to, that makes things go a lot more quickly.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, you know, to Bob's point on at least paying some of a legal bill or, you know, some of those small bills that aren't so small for some newsrooms, you know, I think about libel laws. I think about hearing that the leading Republican presidential candidate boasted last week that he filed a libel lawsuit against a reporter knowing he would not win, but knowing it would be an exorbitant cost for the reporter and it would be financially ruinous for the reporter, and he laughed about it. And I do think at times we do need to examine who pays for what in court, especially when one party is at fault and one party is not at fault. So Bob's suggestion when it comes to freedom of information is maybe make this a little bit more helpful to newsrooms and journalists. Dave writes to us on Twitter, Bob's an underappreciated treasure for the people of New York. Hope he never retires, or when he does, he leaves us a clone. Did you say he tried to retire, Megan?
I believe that he did.
And then nobody let him retire. Yeah, they wouldn't let him retire. And Kim writes to us a question on deadlines. She just said, do agencies abuse deadlines when it comes to freedom of information? Berkeley, I think I thought of you only because in my previous life as a television news journalist, our deadlines are a little different sometimes than Justin and Megan, a little more immediate sometimes. And sometimes if you have to wait 5 days just to get a response and then maybe 3 weeks to get an answer, it's not going to be helpful for what you're doing. And sometimes maybe they can play games that way.
They could, I suppose. I think if they understand, you know, the ratings months in television and they, you know, we know we're trying to get something on in the month of May, you know, could they push it back to June or the summer when nobody watches TV or fewer people watch TV? I suppose they could do that. You know, in my experience, they've all used a different language, and sometimes some entities or government entities think they've got 25 days, some think they've got 21 days, whatever. They've always sort of written to me and they've said, listen, with volume of information you've asked for, we need another week or so. And I was like, okay, fine, that's sure. Whatever you need.
Get your request in early, I guess, then.
Well, you've got to plan for it. And who knows if you know, it's one thing for us to do it. If it's a person who's listening today and they're interested in getting information from their town, their school district, their county. What's their deadline? I don't know. You know, they could wait a year, depending on why they need it. So, you know, I guess you do need some patience.
Sure.
And you need to understand that based on what you're asking for, they might need some help or time.
And I'll just close with a comment, because Justin mentioned earlier, we all know citizens who do use freedom of information. And I recalled my first reporting job in Charleston, West Virginia. There was someone who was very, very active at every single county commissioner meeting. They were there, they were asking for information, and they were known as sort of a crank locally. And I've kind of come to regret this way that we kind of lampoon people who are really involved, because I'd rather see a citizenry much more involved, filing freedom of information, maybe not every day, and maybe not for thousands of documents a week or a month or a year, but it's good to understand the process and to be involved and to sometimes ask questions and to demand some answers, and that's what it's about. Not always confrontationally, but we should be expecting that our government agencies will respond. So I want to thank the journalists who came in this hour to share their experiences during Sunshine Week. Megan McDermott, Justin Murphy from the DNC, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
Very Berkeley
welcome.
Breen, News 10 NBC, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're getting back to work, I assume, right about now.
I've got an interview in probably a couple of minutes.
I bet you do. And if you want to meet Bob Freeman, the executive director on the State Committee on Open Government, head out to the Democrat and Chronicle 5:30 to 7 tonight. Journalist Michelle Norris in studio next.